Time flies when you're having fun. And man, oh man, do we have a lot of it here on today's, on each and every current sports TV and radio show, folks. Well, a packed show in store for you all. I want to remind you all that during our second segment of today's current sports, we'll be talking about the Detroit Tigers as they get an impressive win over the Los Angeles Angels last night. Also, the Lions, as you just heard in our quick hit headliners from Alex, the Lions are not optimistic about signing Sue as of yet. And also, Ray Rice. We didn't get to this during yesterday's show, but Ray Rice being suspended 2 games for that alleged assault incident on his now wife. And it's really interesting because if you look at the whole conversation and commentary behind that, after, you know, when it was announced that Ray Rice would be suspended those 2 games, there were many that came out and felt as though that punishment was a little too light. Well, I got some interesting thoughts on that. I'm sure Alex does as well. You get to hear that. And again, folks, you can weigh in on all of that and so much more by picking up that phone. You know the number, 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Well, a hot, hot, hot topic. Our hot topic during yesterday's show that encouraged a few of you to weigh in out there. Our listeners, we had a few comments on Facebook. I got a few texts. I mean, it was a hot topic show, a hot button show due to this topic, and that topic being the firing of now former Fulton High School football coach John Winkler. Interesting subject. If you really dive into the whole timeline behind this story, there are many, many question marks that still need to be answered. And, you know, I started off yesterday's show by reading a well-written piece by Lansing State Journal sports writer Scott Yoshanis, who is actually sitting right across from me right now to dive into this topic, because Scott, you know, was really the guy when this whole story broke. He was the one that his article was the one I read. I mean, Scott actually, he talked with Fulton superintendent Damon Grifka, and also reached out to John Winkler and put together those pieces and really sparked the discussion that we had on yesterday's show. And we're bringing in Scott right now to sort of dive into this topic. First of all, Scott, how you doing? Happy Friday, brother.
Doing just fine. Thank you.
I'm glad you're here joining with us so we can really dive into this intriguing topic, to say the least, Scott.
Yeah.
And, you know, to start it off, I want to dive into, because, again, you're the journalist who really, really were reporting on this thing hand and foot. You had an incredible timeline of what happened and how you reached out to, of course, Fulton Superintendent Damon Grifka, and also John Winkler himself had a few quotes in the article and the commentary during yesterday's Lansing State Journal sports page. Mm-hmm. I want to just, for our listeners out there who don't know much about this story and maybe tuning in and hearing this story for the first time, can you sort of give us a timeline of how you got the news and went about reporting this story, Scott?
Well, actually, I got the news when the report came down that he was fired, and I kind of went and back and looked at some of the old minutes of the school board meeting, especially the one in January where the superintendent first proposed that he that the board fire Winkler. Well, they didn't do it then. Winkler had a large crowd of supporters with him, people from the community. He had a stack of testimonial letters from other CMAC coaches, mm-hmm. Vouching for his character, and really, I mean, put up a pretty good defense. And it appeared to work. The board at that time did not fully accept the superintendent's recommendation. Instead, let him stand. He's also the baseball coach.
Right, exactly. He's been the baseball coach for, what, over 20 years?
23 years.
Yeah, 23 years.
Let him coach the baseball team that spring and evaluate the situation then. Well, he did coach the baseball team that spring without any sort of incident whatsoever. Won his district, was knocked out in regionals by the eventual state champion, and got a great performance evaluation. The superintendent even said that. He even called it a great evaluation.
Right.
But they fired him anyway. So, really, I mean, it's that's really kind of what caught my eye, is that they said they were going to take this evaluation into consideration, see if he was going to perform. He did perform, and it didn't matter.
It didn't at all. And, you know, reading your commentary piece that, again, was in the Lansing State Journal sports page yesterday, you had some interesting thoughts on it. And just to read a quick excerpt from you, when you talk about when he went to the board and got some support before the baseball season started, and they were going to act like this was going to be an evaluation for his future with the with Fulton Athletics.
It implied that he was on probation for that baseball season, and that, and that if he performed well satisfactorily in the baseball season, then they wouldn't fire him. Well, obviously that wasn't the case.
Exactly. And just to read a quick excerpt here, you say in your commentary, quote, "None of the things cited that have seen the light of day are reasons for a school board to fire a football coach. They are excuses for a superintendent and school board to fire a football coach." Looking at just that component right there, Scott, do you feel as though there was an ulterior motive to eventually let go of John looking at this whole thing?
I don't know that for a fact. I can't say that there was.
Right.
But like I said in the story, if it was, this is exactly what it would look like. I mean, there's based on what I've heard and based on what I know, there's no reason not to think that. Because this is clearly not a reason to fire a football coach. There are instances of four instances of profanity over the last 2 years. Now, I would be willing to bet that whoever they get to coach that team is not going to go without four instances of profanity in the next 2 years.
Right.
So, you know, I really have a hard time believing that the administration of Fulton Public Schools are clutching their pearls about football teams swearing. That doesn't ring very true with me.
You would think that there would be something else going on, because to be honest,
there almost has to be. There has to be. Again, I don't know that for a fact, so I can't say that there is.
Right, exactly.
And I don't know really much more about the motives of the superintendent or the athletic director or the school board any more than anybody else does. Because I mean, I'm not a mind reader, and neither is anybody else. Mm-hmm. But it's just a sad situation because, well, first of all, there's less than 3 weeks of the football season starts.
Right, exactly.
And they're without a coach. I mean, they said they're going to have a coach in place within a week, which may or may not happen. But it really puts that guy, whoever it is, in a tough spot.
Right.
Because he's not going to be able to – I mean, he's going to have to overcome quite a lot of opposition from the community. And that's a fairly small, tight-knit community, especially when it involves football.
Right.
Take the football very seriously, as most CMA schools do, and he's going to have a hard time really gaining the trust of players, fans, parents, fans, everybody. It's just a bad situation for him, and I don't pity the guy at all don't envy the guy at all for taking that job, because it's going to be tough.
Scott Yoshan is sports writer for the Lansing State Journal. Again, folks, if you want to call in, if you have a question for Scott, you can call in right now, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Now, Scott, in your piece, I mean, you actually talked with Superintendent Damon Grifka.
Yep.
From your conversation with Damon, what was the tone like? Did he seem defensive in any regard? I mean, what was that conversation like with Damon?
He really liked his boilerplate. He liked to, I believe this has the standards and ethics and morals or whatever he said. I quoted him in the story correctly and more than I'm doing now. But, which struck me as really kind of blowing swearing out of proportion. You know, it's not, he told me it's not about the profanity. It's about the ethics and morals. Well, what else? What if it's not about the profanity, what's it about?
Yeah,
well, I'm not
going
to go into that. Well, okay, well, then, all right. All we have to work with then is the profanity then. And that's, you know, so that and, well, there was one other issue where a member of the team was supposedly left behind in an away game.
Right, right.
And what that was, how Coach Winkler explained that to me was that this was a player who had not been on the team, came back on the team, wanted to ride the team, or didn't want to ride the team bus, wanted to go home with his parents kind of thing. It was all explained. In fact, that kid came to that meeting in January and explained it all to the board.
Gotcha.
So that should have been cleared up at that moment.
Right.
So, you know, if they're still taking that into consideration, then, you know, really it's almost willful disregard of evidence that contradicts you. And when that happens, there is something wrong.
Yeah, there's a lot of question marks, and it becomes really, really sticky when you look at that. Because, again, you and I both don't know. There's something behind this other than, and I hope there's something behind this other than, four instances of profanity, because that doesn't warrant, in my regard, that doesn't warrant a firing of a coach who's been long tenured at a school.
There almost has to be, and really any speculation, we have to kind of take into consideration that it could be completely innocent. It could be, it could have good reasons for doing this that we don't know about.
Exactly.
We have to consider that. We can't just assume that there's, you know, skullduggery involved and it's, you know, nepotism or favoritism or something like that that's causing this, or just a personality conflict, which actually, I mean, a personality conflict would be a legitimate reason to just say, heck, we have a personality conflict. He has to go. They could have just said that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, and there's definitely some level of subterfuge going on, some level of deceit going on somewhere. And, you know, it's I hate to say where there's smoke, there's fire, but there's something like that. Somebody's not telling us something.
Scott, when you reached out to Coach Winkler, what was his mood like? I mean, what did you guys talk about, and what did he say with this whole situation?
He was kind of dumbfounded. He told me he was blindsided by the meeting in January, and he had to kind of scramble to get his stuff together and make his defense
before the baseball season started.
Yes, the January where it was first proposed that he be fired.
Exactly.
He put up what he thought was an inadequate defense. He thought that it was settled at that time.
Right.
He said that they were watching him like a hawk during baseball season. There were people who were there, which, you know, I mean, if you're on probation, that's going to happen. You know, I mean, seriously, they told you they were going to watch him, and he, you know, obviously expected that.
Right.
The funny thing is that the superintendent, when I asked him, well, if he passed his test, why couldn't he stay? And he essentially said it's because, well, it didn't count because he was being watched, so he was on his best behavior. Well,
really?
Yeah. that was the rationale, and you know, it's like I asked in the column, what that means. He's not going to be watched during football season. I mean, if you're getting the results you want, what's the problem?
What's the problem exactly? And that's the question at the bottom line, because when you outline that in your commentary, and he had this meeting before the board, and they said, okay, this right here will act as sort of a probationary type of thing, and to see if, you know, things go well, and in relation to your future with the program, if everything goes well, you should be fine. And then we have this that ensues.
In their defense, they did say, I believe, I don't have the thing in front of me, but the minutes of the meeting said may have to do with future positions.
Right.
So that's kind of their out. I mean, they can you know, say they have plausible deniability that they promised him that he'd be back if he did well. But it certainly looks as though they had no intention of doing that, because if they did, he'd still be the coach. I mean, there'd be no reason not to. If that really was their intention, to use that the baseball season as a probationary period, he wouldn't have been fired, because he passed that with flying colors.
Right, without a doubt. Now, Scott, when you're looking at this story, what sort of feedback, if any, have you gotten from the Fulton community about this story, or from any of the players or fellow coaching staff? I mean, what sort of feeling do they have toward Coach Winkler being fired?
I have had several emails and several tweets, texts, well, not too many texts, but Facebook, and comments in the comment section
of
the story.
Yeah, I saw some comments in the story.
Not a single one that I've seen has anything bad to say about John Winkler. Former players, parents of players, you know, members of the community. I mean, not a single one. And I even asked, when I talked with Brian Borgman, he's the head coach at Langsburg.
Right, right.
And I asked him, I didn't put this in the story or the column, but I asked him if he had ever seen Coach Winkler go off on a player, you know, use obscenities, that. And while he was quick to qualify that, I mean, he's on his own sideline and he's, you know, he's got his headset on, but he says he's never, ever seen him go off on a player any more than any other coach he's ever seen.
Gotcha.
So, and if I have to believe that if he had, if that was a problem, if that was a reason, somebody would have stepped forward and said, yeah, he, you know, did this to me or did this to a friend of mine or something like that along the line here. But there's none of that, which is odd because there's almost never unanimity in any story anywhere in any comment section on the internet.
Exactly, yeah. So you would think there would be at least one comment.
Yeah, one guy would step up. And the only things that I've seen negative were people who had no connection with the program who were just looking at it from the outside and making a comment like, this is what happens to coaches who do this. Essentially speculating. Not a single communication of any kind have I seen from anyone saying anything bad about John Winkler.
Wow, that's also telling as well. John, Scott, when you look at this story, mm-hmm. what are the biggest question marks for you that still need to be answered?
The biggest question marks for me is why do they have to do this right now? Why do they have? I mean, if they wanted to, you know, if they could have told him, okay, this is going to be your last year, and because he took them through all the summer workouts, all the stuff. Now they're going to need to hire a football coach to come in and essentially run his offense, run his plays. Essentially a babysitter.
Right. Yeah.
Before he can actually be a football coach.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure John has been preparing these kids right. all throughout the summer as
right.
well. Yeah.
Right. And until the moment he was fired, he thought he was a football coach.
Right.
And so and that happened just this past Monday. So, yeah, it's the biggest question mark is why now? Well, that's probably the second biggest. The biggest question is why? I mean, obviously, why are you doing this? Because four incidents of profanity in 2 years is not the reason you're doing this.
Right.
I don't care what anybody says.
I agree.
It's not the reason you're doing this.
I agree as well.
So, and it's a sad commentary that a school board and a superintendent can think they can get away with this. And one of the reasons why we're kind of following this story is because stuff like this does happen. And I would really like the next person who is thinking about doing this to kind of think twice before they do, because it's not going to happen without scrutiny. I mean, you're not going to just be able to arbitrarily fire someone because you don't like them for some reason other than what you're telling us.
Exactly. Scott, does this story remind you of any other story you've covered in this area, or this just has a life of its own?
I don't know that this kind of thing has happened to other coaches in other sports,
right?
Where there isn't quite the same sort of emotion involved. But as far as a prominent coach at that prominent program, I mean, they're one of the very top level small school football programs in the area.
They are.
If they were trying to destroy their football program, they wouldn't do a lot different.
Very, very true. Folks, if you want to weigh in on this, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. The firing of now former Fulton football coach John Winkler. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Well, Scott, before I get you out of here, let's mm-hmm. End on a positive note, shall we?
Okay.
Let's shift gears and talk about Lansing United.
Yes, let's do that.
Let's do that. They had an unbelievable weekend this mm-hmm. past weekend, of mm-hmm. course, winning the Midwest regional title. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was quite a moment down at the East Lansing Soccer Complex. We had Brooks Lambeer, soccer writer for Impact Sports, was down there covering it. We mm-hmm. had him on Monday to talk about it. You were also down there mm-hmm. and have been covering this team throughout its entire first year. Mm-hmm. I mean, what was the atmosphere like down at the East Lansing Soccer Complex on Sunday?
It was wild. I mean, but it's been that way all year. This is a team that has really caught on, and is more than just a novelty. I mean, this is more than just a new kid in town. I mean, these are soccer fans that are watching this,
right?
And these are fans who know the game and enjoy watching the game and have a team to root for now. And that's what I've always thought about. I mean, everybody, you know, the old cliche question: when's soccer going to catch on in America? Well, it has. I wrote a column about that a couple weeks back too.
Yeah,
but. These are not people who are saying, "Well, I think I'm going to give soccer a try." No, these are hardcore soccer people that are at the East Lansing Soccer Complex, and they were living and dying. I mean, the game on Sunday, you know, it went to overtime.
Right, exactly. Yeah, thrilling game.
Yeah, it was an outstanding game. And by both teams, it was one of those games. You know, Fort Pitt is a really good team also, and they're also in their first year, and that was, you know, another cliche is that, you know, a game that it's a shame one of them had to lose. But that was, but it was just a great exclamation point to a great season.
You know, I never would have fathomed, and many would never would have fathomed mm-hmm. that this Lansing United team would have the amount of success it has had this season in its first year, in its infancy of the program. I mean, how impressive is this? And did you ever see this coming?
In terms of just on the field, no. I mean, because you can't. This is a team that has essentially was assembled from scratch at the beginning of the season.
Right.
I mean, there are several players who went to an open tryout who made this team. This is a team that was assembled blind, essentially. And to have the success that they have had against a team, well, for instance, against Detroit City. That's a team that they're established 2 or 3 years now. And they have a lot, they've had a lot of the same players for all those 3 years. I mean, a lot of them are not college players. Most of the players in the NPSL typically are college players, and they have to remain amateur, you know, to retain their status, their amateur status for NCAA eligibility.
Right, exactly.
And so it's difficult, really, to have continuity year to year in a team. So it's, I mean, that's in that way, it's similar to minor league baseball in that regard. You're acting the same guys every year.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a lot of these guys came in sight unseen and just impressed. And Eric Rudland, Coach Eric Rudland, has done an outstanding job of molding this team together and really finding out as the year went on how good they were. And that's something that I mean, every player that I talked to, I asked this question. I said, could you see this happening? And they said, no, we had no idea that how good this team was going to be or how the skill level of the league,
yeah,
the speed of the league, they had no idea. So it's been a surprise to every person involved.
When you look at the makeup of this team, I mean, what do you think makes this team so good?
Well, they have the pieces. Starting in the back, Zach Bennett, you know, the keeper,
the
here at Michigan State,
yeah.
Has played outstanding. Outstanding ball, and he is going to be nationally recognized at Michigan State, I think, as a goalkeeper, because he has played so well. And even he said that he had no idea about the speed of play, and he essentially kept them in that game down the stretch when Fort Pitt would were kind of pressing forward, knowing they were away, they didn't want to go to overtime,
right?
And he made 8 or 9 just near miraculous saves.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too hyperbolic about it. But,
right.
But you know,
it's hard not to, though.
Very acrobatic saves that kept him in that game. And then their two center backs, Austin Dunn, who's from Perry.
Yeah, from Perry,
and,
yeah.
And Ben Lamb, an English guy. They've been rock solid, absolutely rock solid. And that's the foundation of the team. Then you add guys in the attack, like Brian Cunningham, who's had pro experience in Jamaica. You have Tyler Pasher, who was a Canadian international on the wing that nobody in NPSL had an answer for.
Mm-hmm.
You have... all these attacking options. I miss, you know, captain Matt Brown. That's the leading scorer. I guess
Brown,
I probably should,
yeah,
mention him for scoring goals. has been a revelation. I mean, he's fit into this team well. And another thing is that just about everyone I talked to, every player I talked to, said that this is an extraordinarily tight team. They are close on and off the field. The chemistry is great, and that's got to help, especially when you get a bunch of guys who again have come far and wide, from far and wide, not knowing each other almost at all. A couple of guys did, but for the most part, these are 11 total strangers playing soccer at first, and so,
yeah,
and then molded into a team. It's just an impressive story.
It certainly is. All right, Scott, will you be going out to New York to see if they can keep this magic alive?
Sadly, no, I won't.
Okay.
But I'll certainly be following along as closely as I can, and they have a kind of a tall hill to climb. Red Bulls U23 team that they're going to be playing on Sunday hasn't lost a game. They've scored 50 goals and given up 54 goals and given up 4,
right,
all year long in the regular season.
Wow, that's unbelievable. This team is good.
They're really good. They're the U23 team of the New York Red Bulls in Major League Soccer. So they're confident. I mean, I guess who wouldn't be? I mean, they've been overcoming things all year long, and they've been defying expectations, even their own expectations, all year long for their entire existence. And so it'd be an upset, but not a complete shock to me.
Yeah, without a doubt. So if you had to give a prediction, we had Brooks actually give a prediction on Monday. We're big on predictions here on the show, even though they can make it like look like an idiot or a genius here, Scott. If you had to choose, though, who do you think is going to win that match on Sunday?
It's really hard to pick against the Red Bulls at home after, Lens United took a 10-hour bus trip. Well, actually, they're going to go halfway.
Okay.
But a long bus trip away from home, New York Red Bulls are on their home field. They're the favorite. It's hard to pick against them. I'd love to be proven wrong, but that's a pretty tall hill to climb.
And you know, like I said on Monday, no matter what happens, this has certainly been an incredible ride. If it was to end on Sunday, this has been an incredible
ride for
this Lance United team. So.
Absolutely has.
All right, well there you have it, folks. Scott Yoshanis, he covers local prep sports, MSU men's and women's soccer, and Lance United for the Lansing State Journal. He's going to be an incredibly busy man in the coming weeks. You and I both, as high school sports are right around the corner. Scott, looking forward to seeing you on the sidelines, my brother.
I will see you there. Thanks, Al.
All right, no problem. Well, folks, let's hit the first break. When we come back, we'll talk Tigers, we'll talk Lions, and so much more. Do not touch that dial. Current sports returns in the blink of an eye. All right, welcome back to Current Sports on this Funky Friday. Yes, Alex is back behind the glass, rocking us out with some. Yeah, see that, man? You're just jamming. I love Alex because he's always jamming behind the glass, man. Bringing us some funky music on today's Friday. Alex, and you are back, my brother. We have missed Alex these past 2 days. Aaron Young has been holding down the fort, but now you are back and ready to get back to work, huh?
Back at it, and you know what? I gave you a lot of slack because you missed a big week in sports when you were gone.
I did, man. LeBron, you know, made his decision to go back to the Cavs. My homie Rodney Stuckey is now gone. Thank you. Thank goodness. He's now signed with the Indiana Pacers. Mm-hmm. So much happened that week.
But boy, these last few days have been quite a load to handle. I mean, even stories that we didn't mention in the headline, which I'm going to bring up later when we're talking about the Tigers trade.
Right.
With Cameron Maben.
Yeah, I saw that.
Totally ignored that. Former Tiger prospect that they traded.
Right, exactly.
I mean, so I have a lot of thoughts on the prospects they did trade for Joakim Soria.
Exactly. And, you know, you also missed, of course, we just had Scott Yoshanis on the show. The man who broke the story about the Fulton.
Yeah, how about that?
What are just your initial thoughts on that, Alex?
I think Scott hit the nail on the head. There's something that they are not telling us. There's no way that a little piece of information like that is determining the whole situation. But, I mean, yeah, like Scott said, just what a bad situation for a coach like that. You know, great year, obviously well-respected. And it's similar that, you know, we were talking before we went on the air that it's somewhat similar to what happened last year with Webster and Ira.
Jack Wallace.
Jack Wallace and Ira, AD of
Okemos, and that whole situation where he was let go, and there were a lot of question marks with that. That whole fiasco was so crazy and insane in the membrane because they actually hired Wallace back with the team after a lot of protests from people around the community and so on and so forth.
But the main similarity isn't what happened, because with Jack Wallace, that was more of like a booster thing. No one really knew what happened. The similarity between these two is that there's a piece of information that isn't out there. And it's something, there's a little bit of deception, it looks like. Something that is something going on behind closed doors that we don't know. So.
Exactly. And it obviously had nothing to do with his record because, again, he goes down as the most successful varsity football coach in Fulton High School history. Now, again, like, you know, Apache had he was a great caller yesterday. Apache had called in and made a point that, hey, this has nothing, you know, when you talk about high school sports, it has nothing to do with your record. This it goes beyond, we always say it here on Current Sports, it goes beyond the X's and O's. High school sports and youth sports in general are about developing yourself, learning how to win, learning how to lose, learning how to win with class and dignity and so on and so forth. But this story right here, it has a lot of question marks that aren't being answered, and you better believe we're going to get the answers to them, if not soon, later, without a doubt. So, folks, again, 517-355-9527. We have less than 30 minutes in the show. You can give us a ring and give your thoughts on anything that we're talking about on today's show. Well, let's start off with the Tigers. How about the Tigers? You know, an impressive win over the Los Angeles Angels yesterday, last night, I should say. Interesting game. If you look at it, Joe Nathan, he came in and did his thing. He struck out on the side on 12 pitches to secure Max Scherzer's 6-4 victory against the Angels on Thursday night. The six-time All-Star posted his 21st save and 26 chances after Jabba Chamberlain gave up a run on Josh Hamilton's sacrifice fly in the eighth. Now, let's go back in time before this game, Alex. Of course, yesterday, we alluded to it in our quick hit headliners that the Tigers acquired Joakim Soria. Interesting move, a move that to me, Alex, displays a win now mentality. What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, honestly, I don't know what bad things you can say about it. It makes perfect sense.
It does. Perfect.
And Joe Nathan last night, obviously playing with a chip on his shoulder, blowing five saves already, you know, 21 of 26. He already blew five. He only blew four of them last year.
Right.
So he's already blown more saves than he did all of last year.
Exactly.
It's halfway point throughout the season. You bring in Soria, who is proven. I mean, he's getting a little bit older, but he's still a proven reliever.
He's been an all-star.
Right. So if anything does happen, I mean, he could close, he could do late relief, he could set up. So he's pretty versatile, which is important.
Yeah,
so,
you know, with this move, the Tigers they acquired somebody. There's two aspects to this whole thing, Alex. For me, when you look at this move to get Soria, one, you got a guy who can come in and pitch in clutch situations. You know, when the playoffs hit in October, when you need that guy to come in and save a game after a quality start from one of your starters, Soria has proven that he can do that. Now, if there is a negative, it's that Soria has never pitched in the playoffs. But there are many, many other things to like about him. I don't think that'll faze him. I think he'll acclimate very, very nicely into the playoffs with his style of pitching. Now, he throws hard, rarely walks anybody, and that's the biggest thing with me. This man never walks anybody. If you look at it, in 33 and one-third innings for the Texas Rangers this season, he had 42 strikeouts, and get this, folks, just four walks. That's impressive, unbelievably impressive. And if you look at it, Soria, this is the other aspect. That's one aspect. You got a guy who can come in and pitch in clutch situations. The other aspect of this whole thing, Alex, is that Soria has a club option for next season. Jabba Chamberlain, who has done a really nice job, I will say this, a really nice job in the eighth inning. But he is a free agent after this season. And Soria offers eighth inning protection if Jabba decides to leave. So this is also a security blanket for the Tigers as well in this move.
I see the long-term deal that you're talking about, but the point of the matter, Al, and I totally disagree with you here.
What?
Soria is not ready for any clutch situations because he's never pitched in the playoffs.
But
that was
the
whole
guy.
Reason why Jose Valverde was the biggest flop is because he couldn't throw in the playoffs.
Alex, you did not just compare Big Poppy, Jose Valverde.
I'm not comparing him
to Joakim Soria. You just did in that sentence.
No,
you just compared Jose Valverde has nothing to do with Soria.
They don't. But
even though both
of them never pitched in the playoffs before and were never proven.
Yeah, but these are two different type of pitchers here we're talking about. Soria is a guy who is so consistent. I'm pretty sure that when the playoffs come, and I understand the playoffs are a different ball game. It's crunch time for you. But Soria has given us no reason to doubt that he can perform, that he cannot perform in the playoffs just because he hasn't performed that level yet.
Right, but Al.
But look at the stats.
Yeah.
I always say the numbers never lie. In this regard, the numbers are looking pretty good. And he's an all-star. He's been an all-star before. Forget it. Was he a two or three-time all-star?
For Jermell Hill, I'm sure she liked that line. But the fact of the matter, Al, is that Valverde was just as consistent as Soria in the season. It was
at the playoffs where
he started
if
falling.
If you compare Jose Valverde's numbers, regular season numbers, to Jose Valverde's numbers to Soria's numbers, I guarantee there has never been a year where Valverde has pitched 42 strikeouts in just four walks, Alex.
Al.
I guarantee it.
I'm going to pull it up right now.
Well, pull it up right now.
Valverde
please.
Had the most dominating split-finger fastball.
He has never had a season where he has thrown 40-plus strikeouts. And during the just at the halfway mark here, and have four walks. I guarantee you will not. You can Google. You can tweet. You can MySpace. You better dig real deep to find that stat, because I guarantee. But to your point, so you don't think that Soria can come in the playoffs and be effective for this team?
I think he could, but I think what the Tigers really needed in this trade was someone that could provide quality consistency in the playoffs. Someone who's been there before.
And you don't think Soria can do that, even though you haven't seen him pitch in the playoffs
We'll
before.
See, but a guy like Papelbon, who has been to the playoffs, is a way more consistent, safe bet.
But as you said, you like the move. I love this move because you got a guy looking at what he's done in his career. You've got a guy who's shown that he can be very, very effective in those clutch moments. Now, if you look at this whole thing again, Alex, Dave Dombrowski weighed in on it as well. He also talked about the long-term longevity of Soria, which, again, I brought up about, him. Again, if a guy like Jabba Chamberlain decides to leave, you have some security in knowing that Soria has a club option for next season. Dombrowski said, quote, "I think it's a plus for us to know we can have Soria for next year. I don't think that made the deal per se, but it was a real plus." So we'll see how this definitely pans out. I love the move. And, again, it shows that the Tigers, I talked about the being in desperation mode. It's World Series or bust for this team. If the Tigers do not go all the way and win the World Series, it is a complete failure, without a doubt. The Tigers know that, and that is evident with this acquisition.
Of course, but why not add a pitcher? If you're going to make any move.
So you would have liked somebody else. A starting pitcher other than a closer?
Right. So
as much as we've harped on the bullpen week after week after week, Alex, you want another starting pitcher?
I never said starting. I'm happy with the move. Like I said at the top, I think it was a good move. I'm glad they got a relief pitcher. We're talking only relief here. But when they acquire a relief pitcher, I'd rather be someone who is consistent in the playoffs that you can count on.
But we don't know.
Which is fine.
Sample size.
Exactly, here. Which is fine. But there were guys that they could have acquired that have been in the playoffs before as a relief pitcher. Soria, you're right. We don't know. He could be amazing in the playoffs. But it's not a sure bet. And if it's World Series or bust, why not go with someone safe that you know can provide in the playoffs like Papelbon?
So you were really riding that Papelbon train.
I think they should have got Papelbon.
Oh, okay.
But I'm fine with it. This is fine. And after looking at Valverde's stats, 69 strikeouts, 63 in his first year, still a lot of strikeouts. Not the same as Soria.
Thank you.
But
so I was
still,
right.
Still consistent in the season.
So I was right. Not to toot my own horn, but tooty toot toot. I'm just saying. All right, folks, you can weigh in on this. We got 20 minutes left. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Alex, before we hit the second break, the Lions, as you so eloquently ran down in our current sports quick hit headliners, ESPN is reporting that the Lions are, quote, not optimistic that they will be able to sign Ndamukong Suh to a deal. Now, Suh is in the final contract year with the Detroit Lions. He is set to count $22.4 million against the cap in 2014, then will become an unrestricted free agent after this season. What do you think is going to happen with this one, Alex?
The big question, Al, is I want to ask you first, would you put the franchise tag on Suh for an extra year?
Oh, boy, that's an interesting argument.
Because it's not what's going to happen, but the big question is if they put the franchise tag on him, he'll stay another year. So is he worth the franchise tag, I think, is the bigger question here.
Yeah, and you know what? That's the thing. If you look at it, they are forced to either re-sign Suh now or risk watching their most dominant defensive player become an unrestricted free agent in the prime of his career. I think Suh, for me, is so valuable to this team, Alex, because if you look at it, I mean, Suh, looking at his last year's stats here, he had 54 quarterback hurries. That ranks second in the entire NFL, in the entire league, among tackles behind fellow All-Pro Gerard McCoy for the Buccaneers. I mean, that says a lot to what Suh brings to the table. I mean, I always go back to, when I was an intern at Channel 6 News back in the day, and I got the opportunity to go out to Allen Park and to go to training camp and talk and interview these players. I remember vividly seeing Ndamukong Suh walk by and saying, "Oh my gosh, that man is not human. That man cannot be human. That dude's from Pluto." I mean, he was so chiseled, athletic. I mean, he is an unbelievable physical specimen, and he is so athletic when you see him out there. He is a weapon that any team in the NBA is vying to get on their squad, and the Lions are so lucky to have him. Now, you know, Sue, and if this is another thing, Sue is so valuable because he's so dominant, especially when rushing the quarterback, that in those moments, you know, when you look at the matchups, defensive line and offensive line, game in and game out each and every Sunday, Sue was double teamed a lot last year. And that opened up doors for guys like Nick Fairley to open up different holes for them to get to the quarterback. I mean, he creates such a juggernaut on the defensive end that he has become the centerpiece of the defense for this Lions squad. So in that whole spiel, I just want to reiterate the valuable specimen that Ndamukong Suh is to this team. I'm doing everything I can to make sure he stays. I may think about enacting the franchise tag. That's not an option. I probably would pull that trigger.
He does wreak havoc, and he is the centerpiece. But what the fact of the matter, Al, is that you've got three highly drafted, dominant defensive linemen already. You have Fairley, you have Ziggy Ansah, and you have Sue. Now, as much as Sue is the centerpiece,
Sue is the best out of all everybody on that
definitely
line.
The best.
He's
on the
guy.
But the problem is, if you put the franchise tag on Sue, you already have Ziggy Ansah and Fairley to high rookie contracts. So the problem is, you'd be spending a majority of your cap on defensive linemen. Now, is it worth it for the Lions to keep Sue? Yes, it is.
Oh, without a doubt.
But is it worth it to spend most of their cap on the defensive line? Is that the best use of their defensive funds? I don't think so. So as much as I think that they should keep Sue, I don't think they can. Because if they don't, if they keep Sue, you're not getting a top flight secondary. You're not getting anybody, which you know was the whole problem last year.
And that's why this draft to me, and you know, I think I gave the Lions C- or D in the NFL draft because we all saw the biggest weakness for this team was that secondary you just talked about. I mean, it was ridiculous how many times the Lions got beat down the stretch on deep balls and receivers beating their corners day in and day out. It was ridiculous. And they did not address that need at all, really, in this entire draft, right, until late in the sixth or seventh round. It was ridiculous. And if you look at it, you know, and you talk about that defensive line, those other personnel like Fairley and Ansah. If you look at Ansah, this kind of also goes to the value. The value kind of goes up with Sue in this regard, because if you look at Ansah, he didn't participate in the offseason program after undergoing shoulder surgery in February. So he's not 100%. And if you look at Jason Jones, he missed most of last season after tearing his patellar tendon in his left knee. So those guys not being healthy just kind of eclipses the value on how Ndamukong Suh, how important it is for him to be out there each and every Sunday, Alex.
You know, I agree. But keep an eye out for Larry Webster. Keep an eye out for C.J. Mosley. Though, you know, obviously signing Mosley was big, but you're right. I mean, obviously they haven't had any other defensive linemen that have been able to stay really healthy.
Not at all. That's a big thing.
But the fact of the matter is, do you want Suh? Yes, the franchise tag. The problem is they can't sign him right now. For whatever reason, he's not signing. Maybe he doesn't want to stay in Detroit. I mean,
He says he does, but who knows?
You're with a team that can't really win. I'm sure the guy would love to win with a team. So that's the point of the matter. And aside from just winning, it's going to be hard enough to sign him for that. But the most I think you can get out of him is the franchise tag for one more year. So even if the contract expires, I think it makes sense for the franchise tag. But then I think you're going to sacrifice your secondary unless a trade is made. If they trade on Ansah away, they trade Fairley away, they get a secondary out of it, then I think we're talking. But now, do you think that they're going to make a trade at all, Al, season?
I could see that as well, because if you look at it, with both Fairley and Sue entering contract years, there's a chance the Lions, and this has been rumored left and right, that they give fifth-round pick Karen Reed or another young tackle more play than expected this year as they consider their future and possibly even ship those guys to another team. So, we'll see. I mean, this is all up in the air, but I do think that there's some magic going to be pulled out the hat and that the Lions are going to be able to keep Ndamukong Suh some way. So, all right, let's hit our second break, Alex. When we come back, we'll talk about Ray Rice being suspended 2 games. And, hey, it's Friday. That means Reflection Friday. We'll reflect on the biggest sports stories and our favorite sports stories throughout the week. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Get down, tell me, what you gonna do? Do you wanna get down? What you gonna do? You wanna get down? Welcome back to Current Sports on this Friday, July 25th. Hope you all are having a productive Friday to end your week off. Can't believe it's already Friday. All right, Alex. Well, really quickly, before we reflect on the week, I definitely want to briefly talk about this. Ray Rice, of course, football player for the Baltimore Ravens. News broke yesterday that he will be suspended two games during the regular season, two games to start the regular season, in regards to his assault on alleged assault on his now wife. And, you know, I don't know if you've been following this story at all and been reading blogs or, and checking out ESPN to see what journalists feel about this whole thing. And it's been really interesting to read the commentary because there are many out there who feel as though the punishment was a little light. And, you know, guys who get caught for, smoking marijuana and so on and so forth have been punished much harsher than this as incident of alleged, punching his wife in an elevator. So, do you think the punishment fit the crime?
I don't know, Al, because, like you said, there are so many different types of crimes here. This doesn't really happen very often on a wife. And, correct me if I'm wrong, this was when he dragged her out of the elevator.
That's it.
An image like that, I feel that when you get it on camera, I feel that it puts a little bit more effect on it. It's calling for a lot more attention than if you just heard it in a report. You can't tell me that when you heard about Titus Young going and stealing stuff out of people's homes, you can't tell me that the punishment and the media around that story wasn't as big as Ray Rice. I would argue that Ray Rice is way bigger than what Titus Young
got.
Yeah, I
agree.
And I'd say that Titus Young's offenses were way worse.
Well, and I agree. And the thing is, it was caught on film. This is what makes this so bad. This is what makes the Ray Rice situation. And I remember when it broke, and we talked about it here on the show. The reason why this Ray Rice story really got blown up and got a lot of press was that the man was caught on camera dragging his fiance at the time out of an elevator, looking real shiesty, looking around, you know, as he dragged her out. It looked like a scene from a movie. I'm sitting there like, what in the world? This is horrific. But the thing that really harped on, you know, the situation, and which really alluded to Ray Rice only getting two game suspension to start the season, was first of all the press conference. I don't know if you saw the press conference with his fiance, but they held a presser. They addressed the media. She talked about, you know, how she kind of riled on the situation and how, you know, she was very remorseful about it and how Ray and her are trying to repair the relationship. They came across very sincere, they came across as a loving couple, and they got married after that. And it really kind of cleaned up the situation. And another thing is, even though we saw Ray, which the video looked terrible, we saw the video of him dragging his wife out of the elevator and so on and so forth.
Unconscious.
But we don't know what took place in that elevator. That's the thing here. There was no camera in that elevator that caught Ray Rice punching his wife or could have caught her punching him. I mean, who knows what happened in the elevator? So that's the big question mark as to why that incident right there, that the fact that we don't know what happened in the elevator, and the fact that after everything ensued, there was a press conference, which his wife and Ray seemed very, very lovable, lovey-dovey. They got married. Everything seemed fine now. Those two areas are why he only got a two-game suspension. So I feel as though people coming out and saying, oh, he only got two games? Look at what he did. But if you look at what happened afterwards and looking at how we don't know what happened in the elevator, I mean, there's only so much we can say about this situation.
Exactly. You see it on tape. It looks a lot worse. We don't know what happened. Honestly, given the fact of the actual crime, two games honestly makes a lot of sense. I think that if you look at past crimes, I mean, most suspensions are four games, eight games, multiples of four. And a lot of those are for drug offenses,
most of those
substance
are red-handed
abuse
cases where you are caught red-handed with marijuana in your car or something.
Steroids.
You know, steroids, exactly. Yeah. That's hardcore evidence. Here, there's a few question marks still in the air.
But not just that. Of course it correlates to probably his on-field performance, but something like taking steroids or using banned substances to help your on-field performance versus something that's totally off the field is, for me, a way worse crime to the actual game of football. So I'm more understanding of a 4-game punishment for a banned substance than a 2-game punishment for something that doesn't have to really do with on-field performance.
Yeah, but you know, still, if he was caught red-handed punching his fiancée, better believe that would have been a 2-year suspension. Oh, my goodness. All right, folks. Well, Alex, we only have 3 minutes left in the show. Favorite sports stories of the week. Reflection Friday, folks. What are your favorite moments of the week?
Mine has to be this Ohio State banned, you call it hazing allegation, and the reason...
I didn't know it was a hazing
allegation. The thing is there's so many question marks to it because it started from one parent complaining, and it all stemmed from several other hearsay, she say, he say stuff of sexual, you know, practicing in underwear, and a lot of males were on the ban. It was a male-dominated ban, but there were females there. So you're touching very political grounds from all the different practice, you know, and sexually illicit skits they're talking about. So this is going to blow up to one of those bigger national stories, just like the FAMU ban hazing allegation, just like, although very different, national is big, like Michael Sam was. I mean, this is going to get the attention of all kinds of news sources. So for me, this is another big story coming out of the summer where, as we remember, summer being very quiet, and this story, and Michael Sam, and Rodney Stuckey, even LeBron, it's just creating such a very dramatic summer. So.
Yeah. I like how you equated the Rodney Stuckey letting go to Michael Sam. In my eyes, that story was just as big. The Ohio State band director being fired for, sexual allegations. That just broke today. Again, he was accused of, you know, having band members practice in their underwear. They were given explicit nicknames and perform sexually charged skits. So, yeah, that certainly was a big one. For me, definitely Desmond Ferguson being on the show. We had James Moore on. James Moore's camp, folks, is going on today, 5 to 8 p.m. We're going to be out there with the camera shooting that. Also, it's taking place tomorrow at 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. James Moore has done a great job with the SWAP campaign, Speaking with the Purpose campaign, and we are honored to be sponsored in that whole campaign. So, definitely. But that definitely had to be one of my favorite moments of the week, chatting with Desmond and also James Moore. All right, folks. Wow, we are out of time. But, hey, you know that you can continue to be a part of the current sports action by liking us on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports and follow me on Twitter at Al Martin WKR. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin on WKR East Lansing. As always, take care, have a fantastic weekend, and hey, be easy, people.